It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The hunt is intensifying for new treatments for migraines, the common and debilitating headaches that often have confounded scientists. They've done that for decades. 36 million Americans suffer from migraine headaches, it's estimated. Perhaps you are one of them. This hour, we want to investigate and look at the science, not only of migraine headaches, but headaches in general. There are so many different types of headaches, and we'd like to have you join our conversation. Do migraines strike you? What's your story? How do you cope? And what questions do you have? Perhaps you have some answers that you have discovered about your own headaches. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. In just a moment, we'll look at the science of headaches, what we've learned in past decades about migraines and other types of headaches with Dr. Ann Rankin. She's a neurologist at Unity Point in Des Moines. But first of all, let's talk to Marianne Crandall. Is a former migraine sufferer, a massage therapist who lives in Des Moines. Marianne, you're on the line with us. Hello.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much. I'm not a sufferer of migraines, thankfully. You have had migraines very often recently, but I understand starting off at the age of six?
Yes. I didn't know they were migraines at the time, but they would pull my hair back, and by after an hour or so, my head would hurt so bad that if you even came near me, I would be sick. So I realized later that they were migraines.
So that was the trigger to put your hair in a ponytail or something like that? Uh-huh. And that happened each and every time?
Every time. Even now, if I wear my hair up too long, I will have a headache by the end of the day, and I'll be sick.
Mm-hmm. What did you discover at the age of six, seven, eight? What did your parents discover? Did you get behind that very quickly?
Well, we did. Our doctor was my regular doctor was really good about it. We started to journal by the time I was 10 and 11. I would write down every day what I would do, what I would eat, what time I ate, the level of headaches. And so I knew by 14, 15, pretty much what my triggers are and how to cope with them.
Mm-hmm. And triggers, besides being having your hair put up, were what other sorts of triggers?
Chemical smells is a real big one, or perfume, like a real heavy fragrance. If I don't eat it on time, if I don't drink enough water. And now it's if I don't exercise enough or get out there to get my blood flowing, I notice that I am more susceptible to headaches.
Mm-hmm. So, as an adult, your migraines, have they waxed and waned through your adulthood?
They had. They were getting really bad through my late teens and into my early 20s, 30s. And that's when I really had bad cluster headaches. They would do letdowns because out of a month I would probably – you could count almost every day around the same time I'd have the same headache, and it would last about a week or so. And
So for those of us who don't suffer from migraines or cluster headaches you just mentioned, describe a migraine for you from start to finish, because there are different types of migraines, but what was your worst migraine like?
Well, I always used to say, because mine would always come on the right side, right above my eye, and I said it was like my little pickaxe. He would sit there and just hit at my head. And so it depends. If I couldn't control it, worse migraine, I would end up vomiting. The light would bother me. If I was out in a situation, I'd have to make sure I was home before dark, because headlights, I wouldn't be able to drive, because that piercing light would just devastate me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the worst.
Yeah. So it was find a dark room just to be still and be safe, right?
Exactly. And just pray I could go to sleep.
What about drugs? How have they worked?
You know, I tried. I did a Maxalt, which was a self-dissolving pill. I tried a nasal spray, and I did oral medications. But I have found that those work okay, but I try and nip it before it happens. I can tell my neck gets really tight before it comes, and I can tell it's coming a couple days before. And so that's why I went to massage school. I work my neck and I loosen it up, and then I can prevent the headache.
So I understand that this, you're a massage therapist now, but this migraine caused a career change for you.
Absolutely.
How did that happen? Tell that story.
I worked for a finance company for 6.5 years, and I would say the whole entire time I would have – that's when my clusters really in my migraines, like I would let down. Like I would work Monday through Friday, and then as soon as I'd get off work Friday, I'd be down. I could, you know, depending on – most of the time I was down all weekend.
When you say let down, does that mean relax or are you saying something else? So it was at the moment after a period of stress, you would relax and then boom.
Yes. And that happens to most people because they can function at that level, and as soon as they – start to relax, that's when it will come on. And like I said, it would last most of the times into Sunday, and then I knew I had to get back to work on Monday. So I guess my body was like, all right, we're in survival mode again for the week.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided I've got to figure something out here. And that's when I went to massage school, and I thought, this should help me.
How has that worked out? How long ago was that?
I went to massage school and graduated in 2001, so about 12, 13 years now, and my headaches, like I said, I can control them. You have pressure points on your hands if you work your neck. As long as I do everything I'm supposed to, I've been pretty successful at it.
Well, that's great. Congratulations, Marianne.
Thank you.
On figuring that out. It's a little like a sleuthing, a little detective work that you've been putting in. We hope to hear some other detective work from other listeners this hour. But Marianne Crandall, thank you very much for joining us and telling us your story, and good luck keeping those migraines away.
Thank you so much.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, talking about migraines and headaches in general this hour, and we'd like to have you join our conversation. Do migraines strike you? What's your story? How do you cope? Have you found a solution like Marianne did? And joining us for the rest of the hour to answer your questions about migraines and other types of headaches, Dr. Lynn Rankin is a neurologist at Unity Point in Des Moines. Dr. Rankin is in our Des Moines studio. Hi.
Hi. Nice to be here. I'm so excited, actually. I'm a big IPR fan.
Very good. I think I gave you the name Ann first. I'm sorry about that. You're Lynn Rankin.
Lynn. Mm-hmm.
Lynn, thank you for joining us, Dr. Rankin. React to Marianne's experience there. How typical is her experience among migraine sufferers?
She has many of the common features. But as you mentioned, there are so many different factors for each individual that it does take a lot of sort of research and observation and then eventually enlightenment about what affects your own attacks.
Let's start with the basics. Why do headaches happen? What are they?
Ah, yes. So it is a very unique pain condition that affects the head. There's nothing like migraine of your leg or, you know, your arm or anything. So this is a really unique condition that I think probably is some sort of self-protective mechanism. Maybe it's a reminder to us to treat our bodies well.
Mm-hmm. Do we know what happens in the head when we have a headache, or is that as varied as the different type of symptoms you can have?
Well, as far as the pathophysiology goes, we've learned a lot in the last two decades. So the research is exploding. But as you mentioned, with 36 million migraine sufferers out there, there is a huge campaign called the 36 million migraine campaign to try to raise that amount of money for research. So we've been underfunded in the headache field.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we can get more funding, we can answer these questions better. But very simplistically, what is going on is this is a primary brain event, the first area of activation, and we know this from functional neuroimaging studies, these fancy new MRI scans. The first area of activation for migraine is in the brain stem, so that the nerve signals are sent out. And the migraine actually is more like referred pain from the brain. The brain itself doesn't have pain fibers. The dura, the covering of the brain, though, is densely innervated with pain fibers. And our scalp, as everyone with migraine knows, is densely innervated.
And that explains how when Marianne would have her hair pulled back as a girl in a ponytail, that would be a trigger.
Yes. And in fact, back when they called migraines sick headaches, you know, and maybe my grandparents' era, they would cut the hair of young migraine sufferers short to see if that would help them.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the range. In reading about migraines, I was surprised at how many different types of migraines there are and how many symptoms. What is a range of symptoms that you come across? And I understand you are also a migraine sufferer or have been in the past.
Right. My first migraine was at age 13, and I came across a letter back when kids wrote their grandparents letters.
From camp, maybe,
Came across the letter when I described my initial headache, and like Marianne, I didn't know it was a migraine, but a headache that was so intense and all-encompassing, I couldn't do anything, and it caused me to vomit and just, you know, being lying on the bathroom floor, and eventually I had to get an injection to stop it. It was that severe. But let's just dissect out the migraine attack. She mentioned something that's called the prodrome, and for her it was neck tightness for a day or two before her attack, which if you're aware that that is a potential prodrome symptom, then it kind of prompts you to do whatever your body needs. You know, for her, loosen the neck muscles, and maybe for someone else, rehydrate or maybe catch up on your sleep, something like that. But so there's that prodrome that some people have that's helpful. Then 20% of migraine sufferers actually have an aura of neurological dysfunction. It's typically in the vision or affects the vision because it's activation of the visual cortex. And the classic aura would be like shimmering or a glare or spots with jagged edges.
So this is objects in your field of view that have everything has an aura.
So 20% of migraine patients will experience this aura of objects, flashing lights. There's a variety of symptoms, but within the individual, it's usually very stereotyped. But it'll typically start in the periphery of your visual field and slowly march across your vision, and it goes on for about 20, 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I understand that you can also, these auras can affect other senses. You can have sort of sensory auras as well.
Right. Typically, the visual aura is freestanding, and that's the most common. But if that wave of excitation progresses anteriorly into the parietal cortex, then you get a tingling or numbness, and it's typically in the hand and maybe ascends up the arm and then causes some tingling around the mouth or even in the tongue.
Some people have trouble talking when they have migraines. Yeah,
right.
This is interesting.
So if this wave of depolarization keeps slowly progressing from one lobe to the next, then the next lobe it would reach would be the frontal lobe, and it would affect the ability to express yourself or the temporal lobe maybe give you word-finding problems. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty rare, but that can happen. And even on rare occasions, it can cause motor weakness. So there's something called a hemiplegic migraine, which could be very scary, of course.
One of the syndromes connected with migraines that was very interesting to look at was this. It's called Alice in Wonderland syndrome. Can you tell us about that with a perception of shapes and sizes?
Yeah. So objects in your visual field may appear abnormally large or small or even a bit cartoon-like. Yeah, and that would be due to the disruption in the sensory processing center of the parietal lobe.
Okay, so talk about how much our understanding has changed about migraines and headaches. For instance, Dr. Rankin, I'm not sure when you went to medical school, but take us back to medical school. Is it changed our understanding since what you were taught in medical school?
Oh, absolutely. So I'm a 1988 graduate of our University of Iowa College of Medicine. And back then, I remember, maybe having one or two classes on headaches and neurology. And of course, the focus is to make sure you recognize the very small percentage of headaches that might signal an underlying condition, you know, brain tumor or bleeding in the brain, something like that. So that's the focus in med school is, you know, make sure you know how to recognize the secondary causes of headache. And then very little time was spent on, you know, the 99 out of 100 cases of patients with headache you will see, which are the primary headaches. And back then, there was no standard terminology for headache. So vascular headache would be the term one physician would give to migraine, and cephalgia might be the term the next would give. So fortunately, in 1988, the year I graduated, we had the first international classification for migraine come about. And that was huge because, as you know, there's no blood test for your type of headache. So we needed an expert-guided classification system, and then that could then lead to good studies. You can't do research if one group's, you know, defining their own set of patients with migraine and another group has a different definition. So that classification system then set the stage for the development of the triptans, and those were the first designer drugs for abortive or acute treatment of migraine.
Okay, let's go. We're going to have plenty of calls this hour as we talk with Dr. Lynn Rankin, a neurologist at Unity Point in Des Moines, talking about migraines and other types of headaches this hour as we try to puzzle out. Science has been trying to do that over the last couple of decades, and very recently a lot of strides made in understanding and in treatment. We want to get to as many of those as possible. Let's talk to Bev in Mason City. Hi, Bev. Are you a sufferer?
Hi.
Are you a sufferer of migraines?
Yes, I am. I have had them since I was 9 years old, and I have the classic visual aura that precedes them. I found out about age 20 that I could follow a low-purine diet, a diet for people with gout, to get some control over them.
Mm-hmm. Not completely control, but your low-purine diet eliminates most of them?
It reduces the pain tremendously and reduces the frequency. So it doesn't necessarily stop the aura from happening, but the severity and having to just go to bed has been eliminated. Besides, of course, avoiding the traditional triggers of MSG and some of those other things. High salt diet is another trigger, high salt content of food. But, mm-hmm. It's just been amazing. And I don't know if other people have, I know people are different, but I don't know if other people have found that this has been a help for them.
Okay.
So I'm basically a vegetarian now, actually.
Okay, Bev, that prompts us to ask Dr. Rankin about the role of diet in triggering migraines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to study this, of course, because there's so many variables, and food studies are just notoriously different to conduct. But yes, in the clinic, I hear over and over and over about individuals' food triggers. The classic ones are the food substances that have what we call vasoactive effects, so that maybe like dilate vessels or constrict, like caffeine, for example. Caffeine's kind of a two-part story where it actually can help a little bit at the onset of migraine, but daily, especially in amounts over like one serving a day, can really aggravate migraine and even increased frequency progressively over time. Other vasoactive substances, I think she mentioned MSG, so we need to avoid all those canned and boxed foods that have monosodium glutamate in them, nitrates in processed meats, the pepperonis, bolognas, sausages can be a real problem. Sometimes kids have a real problem with artificial sweeteners, so we want to avoid those, just like we want to avoid all those sweetened beverages for other health reasons.
When we talk about,
and then there's mm-hmm. the red wine is always a fun one to talk about too.
Yes, what is it in the red wine?
Well,
the sulfates.
You know, that's the misconception is
it's
the
good.
Sulfites.
Okay.
Yeah,
correct
yeah.
me.
So,
yeah, what is it?
Oh my goodness! A recent study. Some chemists found that there are just like hundreds of molecules in wine to be studied, but it's actually more the phenol compounds, and tannins are one of the main classes. So flavonoid phenols is the thing, and red wines typically are higher in the tannins, and then certain red wines are better, and certain red wines might be a little easier, like the Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon grapes. Those are supposed to be a little bit less migraine-inducing.
Right. We have some wines out there, I think Greek wine, some of it can have a tremendous amount of tannins in it, can it? You mentioned a blood test a moment ago. We're coming up on a break, but I wanted you to address the genetic component here. You can take a blood test to find out if you're susceptible to migraines?
No. I meant that there is no blood test. So in the absence of any biomarker for migraine, we had to have the experts across the world come together to come up with a classification system. On the genetics of migraine, for regular migraine with and without aura, there isn't just one gene that's a cause, but we definitely know that there is a genetic influence.
So should we think about it this way when we think about that you are genetically predisposed with a certain number of triggers, and stress may be one that hits a number of those triggers. So you may be predisposed, but you may not suffer because you lead a nice, low-stress life, for instance.
Right, absolutely. So most of the patients I see have something that predisposes them to the migraine condition. So it might be genetics. It might be that they had a concussion, a car accident with whiplash, something that sort of primed the pump.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that there are three times as many women are three times as likely to suffer from migraines?
Yeah. Well, the answer is the hormonal fluctuations. But interestingly, before puberty, the prevalence of migraine in boys and girls is equal. So it's at the time of puberty, around age 13, that we really see that incidence take off and escalate much more in women, to the point that in adulthood, women is three times more migraines three times more common in women. There's that strong hormonal influence. We see that with troubles with, girls and the teens with migraine. We see changes in migraine from birth control or during or after pregnancies. And then we sometimes see those migraines act up again around menopause.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we want to continue our discussion about migraine headaches, the latest research on that, what we've learned. And it turns out, seems we've learned quite a bit just over in the last few years since our guest, Dr. Lynn Rankin, was at medical school at the University of Iowa. She's now a neurologist at Unity Point in Des Moines. We'd like to have you join our conversation. Do migraines strike you? What's your story? How do you cope? What have you sleuthed about the nature of your migraines? What questions do you have? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can email us, river2river@iowapublicradio.org, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Back with more in just a moment. So good to have you with us back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about migraine headaches, other types of headaches today with Dr. Lynn Rankin, a neurologist at Unity Point in Des Moines. She's come into our Des Moines studio to share with us the strides that have been made in understanding these menacing headaches, migraines, all the different types of symptoms you can have. Also, we want to talk this half hour, focus more on the advances in treatment and therapy. 1-866-780-9100. Do migraines strike you? What's your story? How do you cope? 1-866-780-9100. river2river@iowapublicradio.org. Dr. Rankin, let's go to talk to some of our callers right off the bat here. Ann is with us from Des Moines. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Are you a sufferer of migraines?
I am. I'm a 50-year-old woman, and I've had them probably since puberty. And they're starting to subside a little bit, but I just thought I'd call in and say that I've started to take magnesium supplements, and I think that that helps a bit in preventing them. But my other question was, and she may have answered that earlier when she was discussing how it would go down to your arm and other parts of your body, but I've had a couple of headaches where I've actually felt like I was having a stroke. And I wondered, I think I've read in some different articles, it said people that get migraines with auras are more likely to suffer from stroke. So
okay,
just wondered about that.
Let's put that to the doctor, Dr. Rankin.
Yeah. So regular migraine without aura has not been shown to elevate your risk of stroke. But migraine with aura elevates your risk a couple times. Now, 2 or 3 times an increased risk of stroke in a young person, it's still a very rare event. So I don't want to alarm everyone out there that if you have migraine with aura, you're at high risk of stroke. But I think it is a wake-up call to those with migraine with aura to make sure their vascular risk factors are managed, so that if you have risk factors like diabetes or high blood pressure, smoking, high cholesterol, those are being addressed, and to consider taking an aspirin daily if you have one of those vascular risk factors.
Earlier in the hour, we talked with Mary Ann, who had to change jobs, actually, to get away from the stress of her job and have a job that gives her lower stress. But here's a related email from Rachel. I have suffered chronic classic migraine since the age of 14. Medicine has advanced such that one can take palliative medicine to get through the workday. However, I know that each time I take my medication, I am causing long-term damage to my heart. I am trading my future health to keep my job or not to miss hours of work. Most people are kind and understanding, but don't realize the sacrifices that treatment entails, especially if your life's work is demanding. A lot of situations you run into like that?
Oh, I'm not sure what medicine she is describing, because really our migraine medicines are safe for long-term use. So I am not sure. Now, the triptans can cause some chest sensations, but they are not cardiac. So I'm not aware of that kind of long-term sacrifice she's talking about there.
Let's have you comment about some of the newest treatment, the strides that have been made in treatments. The triptan family is one that's often mentioned. Yeah,
right. And I think we need to upfront make sure we clarify the difference between daily preventive treatment, where we're trying to change the threshold for getting migraines and reducing the total frequency of migraines, versus the abortive treatments. So the abortive treatments are just those things you take acutely to try to stop the attack in progress. So that would be the triptans, and there's 7 different triptans. Sumatriptan was the first.
What are they doing in the brain?
And they are blocking the release of inflammation, inflammatory polypeptides from the trigeminal serotonergic nerve endings. So this is where it gets into the complicated pathophysiology, but these drugs were specifically designed to block these chemicals that cause the vessel dilation and the sterile inflammation around the brain.
Okay, how effective are these drugs generally? When you prescribe them to a patient, can you say this is going to do it, or this may do it, it may not?
Yeah, the oral agents, the oral triptans, and there's 7 of them, they work in about 2/3 of migraine patients. You can boost that up to about 75%, 3/4, if you deliver the Imitrex sumatriptan in the auto injector.
Mm-hmm. Earlier this year, the USDA, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, approved the first device aimed at preventing migraines. This is a headband device that runs on a battery, sits across the forehead. Do you know about this?
Yeah. So that's using the neuromodulation approach. So that would be a preventive, not an abortive. It's to be worn 20 minutes a day to try to prevent. So previously, we just had medications and Botox approved by the FDA for prevention. This Cephali device has really been studied in a relatively small number of patients. The FDA approval process for devices is less stringent than for medication. So whereas, for example, in the studies of topiramate for prevention or Botox for prevention, we've got a couple thousand patients, the Cephali device was approved based on two studies of 60 patients each.
Mm-hmm. So are you?
So I don't have a lot of experience with it yet.
Are you prescribing that at Unity Point in Des Moines?
It has come up in conversation, and I have mentioned it to a couple patients where they've already tried a lot of things and they have frontally located headaches. So I think it's going to be one weapon in the armamentarium, maybe not the magic wand that we hope to have someday.
Botox, you mentioned. How does Botox prevent migraines?
Yeah, this was quite a surprise because, you know, Botox is a paralytic agent. It relaxes muscles. So we thought originally when Botox started being used for a headache that it would help tension-type headache, not so much migraine. Ultimately, we found that it actually is very useful in a subgroup of migraine called chronic migraine. These folks generally started out with episodic migraine earlier in life, and gradually over the years, the headaches got more and more refractory to treatment and more frequent. The chronic migraine definition is 15 or more headache days a month, at least half of which are migraine. So that is the group that actually has shown a response to Botox. They come in every 3 months, and we inject very small amounts of Botox liquid across the forehead, at the temples, the back of the scalp, the upper neck, and the shoulder muscles.
Mm-hmm. I see some other treatments here. Something called a security patch. Is that right?
I haven't had any experience with that yet. I think that's delivering the sumatriptan maybe through electrical means. I'm not sure on that one.
Okay.
Just a different way to deliver the triptan medication, though.
Okay, let's...
A lot of patients have such nausea with their migraines that we look for non-oral routes.
Let's go to Charles in Des Moines. Hi, Charles.
Hello there.
Hi. Are you a migraine sufferer?
I'm not. Actually, my name is Dr. Charles Reed. Hi, Lynn. It's nice to hear you on IPR.
Thank you.
I was just calling to mention the efficacy of chiropractic treatment in managing migraine headaches.
Okay, so massage, chiropractic might be an avenue here?
Yeah, you know, with a lot of these alternative therapies, they are potentially helpful at reducing triggers and just what we call neuromodulation, trying to reduce all that incoming pain trafficking into the nervous system. So I don't know of any studies I can show you that definitely favors one type of modality like chiropractic versus physical therapy versus massage. But I think they all potentially are of benefit, especially when people have musculoskeletal issues contributing.
Mm-hmm. A brain chemical, I've been reading about this here. It goes by the acronym CGRP.
Uh-huh.
And that's sort of on the forefront of discovering better cures, what's behind migraines. Tell us about that brain chemical.
Yeah, calcitonin gene-related protein. Earlier I had mentioned how the trigeminal nerve endings, when stimulated, and those are the sensory nerves around the face and scalp, how they release various chemicals. And CGRP is one of those, and it's a potent vasodilator. So many migraine sufferers know how that their temporal artery just pulses and pounds during the migraine. Well, that's because of the CGRP that's just been released. So just like our research led to the development of triptans to block some of these proteins. Currently, there's a lot of research looking at drugs that can block the CGRP.
Let's go to Richard. Richard in Des Moines talking about migraines this hour with Dr. Lynn Rankin of Unity Point in Des Moines. She's a neurologist there. Richard, hi.
Hello.
Go ahead. You've got a question. Are you a sufferer?
Well, sort of. I've never been to a neurologist, but I've seen ophthalmologists, and I have what they've described as ocular migraines.
What does that feel like?
Well, I don't get a headache. I think it's what you're describing as the aura. I just get a feeling in the center of my vision that something's getting a little blurry or whatever, and then I get these herringbone patterns that slowly pass through my field of vision. It takes about 20 minutes, and then it's gone.
And no pain associated with it?
No pain at all. It's just sort of a mild inconvenience.
Well, aren't you lucky?
Yeah, I guess.
what's going on there, Dr. Rankin? What do you guess?
Yeah. Research is lacking on why some sufferers do not get the pain experience. So, you're a lucky one that you just have the, the aura. And interestingly, that phenomenon is a little more common in men and a little more common as people get older. So sometimes in the elderly, I'll be talking to them and hearing just about the clusters they'll get of these auras without any headache. And sometimes that can be scary if they've never had that before. You can take medication to prevent those if they're frequent enough. But oftentimes, once you know how to recognize it, you can just pull over if you're driving and shut your eyes, wait for it to stop.
Richard, thanks for sharing.
Okay, thank you.
Mona is with us on the road, 1-866-780-9100. Mona, are you there? Mona, are you there? I'll give you one more chance. Evidently not. Sorry, we couldn't connect with you. Mona, you mentioned earlier, Dr. Rankin, that there's been, I think I understood you say, insufficient funding. You've got a campaign, 36 million migraine campaign, to get, obviously, some more funding. Why has there been insufficient funding?
That's a great question. Migraine wasn't even a category of disease recognized for funding at the NIH until recently. So I think, just maybe misperception about the degree of disability. And a group out of Albert Einstein has just done fabulous work on epidemiology of migraine in the last 20 years, including impact on life, work, all the different roles, and then the potential cost of that to Americans. So I think we needed the improved research to really be able to put out the call to action. Maybe we also needed a public face of migraine. You know, Michael J. Fox has just been a wonderful crusader for research in Parkinson's. We haven't really had that until I would say the last year or two, when Cindy McCain, Senator John McCain's wife, stepped forward to start talking about her own migraine experience and really promote this 36 million migraine campaign.
Do you think there's a stigma attached to having migraines?
Some of my patients do relate that to me. And so I do think there's some of that minimization because there's such a difference between the headache experience that almost everybody has had, you know, just regular old tension headaches, and then these migraines. And people, I think, with minor tension headaches from, you know, hangover or working too hard or whatever, they may not recognize or acknowledge the degree of suffering that can go on with migraine because they haven't experienced it. There's also a stigma in the emergency room sometimes, I think, that because migraine is fairly invisible, you get put down at the bottom of the totem pole in the emergency room, and sometimes people are made to feel like they're drug-seeking. But it is interesting that opiates, which would be, you know, an addictive pain reliever in class of medicine, actually don't work very well for migraine. So my migraine sufferers are not drug-seeking in that sense. They're relief-seeking.
You talked about sulfates not being a cause in wine of migraines. Are there any other misconceptions you commonly run across that have been disproved?
You can probably help me on this. I'm sorry, off the top of my head,
no,
interesting
to read about. There was an 8 ways to headache proof your home was an article that I saw. So you can have by like patterns in your room, the lighting level, whether you have incandescent or other types of bulbs can be triggers, huh?
Yeah, fluorescent lights can be a real problem. It's felt that blue light waves are the part of the spectrum that are a problem. So there is a company that actually makes glasses for migraine sufferers to filter out the blue light.
Mm-hmm. Donna is with us in Keokuk. We're coming to the end of our hour, Donna, but I think you have an interesting question.
Yes, thank you. I was wondering if you could comment on how migraines might or not be related to epilepsy. I have members of my family who have both, and it seems like that they might be, but okay. I wanted to hear what your thoughts are.
Okay, a little hard to understand, but I think how they relate to epilepsy.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so that's probably a good doctor-to-doctor or doctor-to-patient conversation, because there is a small group of patients who seem to have an overlap with epilepsy. But in general, it's two very different processes.
Okay. What about, as long as we're on epilepsy and we had a new law passed here, do we have, and we have some activity on our Facebook asking about medical cannabis possibly being some sort of treatment?
Yeah, I actually have very little to say about that because we just don't have research. So I can't comment on how it would be used for migraine, but maybe with legalization of medical marijuana in some states, we'll be able to get the research we need to see if it has a place in management.
Scott is with us in Iowa City. Not much time, Scott. What's your question?
Two quick questions. One, have you found that weather relationship to migraines, in other words, sometimes I feel my response to weather patterns moving in, thunderstorms, but more importantly, the question on pain relief. Vicodin is my last resort at this point. I need other choices. Can you give me three for pain relief? I can see them coming. I get them. They're related to my father. There's no secrets here. I can't stop them. What can I do to stop the pain?
Scott, thanks for your call from Iowa City.
Yes. So quickly, yeah, weather has been borne out as a trigger, and it has been studied and shown. So the weather fronts definitely can bring them on. In terms of treatment, I'm assuming you mean acute treatment.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah. So the triptans, if you have migraine, I'm assuming we're talking about migraine. So the triptans can be taken at onset. There's melting tablets, regular tablets. You could do a squirt of a nasal spray or even the auto injection. Other than that, there's anti-inflammatories. Cambia is the name of a preparation that's a powder, and you just put it in an ounce of water, and that would have quicker onset than maybe your over-the-counter ibuprofen or Aleve. We like to avoid Excedrin, at least on a frequent basis, because it can lead to rebound headaches. So those of you who take Excedrin, really keep it down to just 2 days a week.
Okay. A lot of callers who didn't get on and people wanting to have sort of diagnosis here, we always have to remind people in these types of shows to see your primary care provider, and they will help you find a solution if you have migraines to determine this. Before we go, I want to get a quick answer to this question. Dr. Rankin, as a neurologist, where do you see in the future the most progress being made in treatment of in understanding migraines? Are we going to be able to do away with them at some point?
I don't know that we'll ever do away with them, because I almost think it is part of the brain's protective mechanism. So I don't think doing away with them will be likely, but I think we will have much better preventive meds, so people don't have to suffer through so many attacks. We'll have other means of peripheral modulation, like maybe transcutaneous magnetic stimulation. And then I think we'll have, as you pointed out, some other abortive options for those one-third to one-quarter of patients who don't respond, excuse me, to the triptans.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, it can't hurt. We are getting to a more hectic society as we go through the decades here. It can't hurt to just step back and ask yourself, is your lifestyle, is your work somehow triggering this, right?
Yes, I'm a huge fan of yoga, and I've also seen some people improve through like neurofeedback, some of these things. So anything that promotes mindfulness and strengthening that mind-body connection could be very helpful.
Okay, thank you very much. Dr. Lynn Rankin, our guest this hour, a neurologist with Unity Point in Des Moines, also sharing her expertise about migraines and headaches, and as a migraine sufferer. When was your last migraine, Dr. Rankin?
Oh, I'm doing so much better, but unfortunately I tried to exercise in the heat last week.
Oh, and that was the trigger.
I paid for it.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Dr. Rankin, thank you so much for
coming
into our
studio. Thank you for having me.
And tomorrow on this program, we'll be talking about the U.S. Patent Office ruling last month that the Washington Redskins nickname is disparaging of Native Americans. Perhaps been following this, that the team's federal trademarks for the name must be canceled. So tomorrow's question, what's in a name? And we'll also talk, I think, about the ruling that came down in the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court Hobby Lobby case. We hope you'll join us tomorrow over the noon hour. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon and Emily Woodbury, and our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I think John Pemble helped us out in Des Moines today. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.